Dancing to Florence and the Machine or Michael Jackson most mornings before the hallways woke with tired grad students. Ashley and I didn't know a few months away that we would be moving westward together. We danced hard. Ash all arm, me all hip. We danced our weekends out, shitty dates, crappy feedback on poems, the students we couldn't reach, solo hikes, Wild Lake Superior, the snow still stuck to our socks, the rent we barely afforded, the odd jobs we kept on the side. 3 minutes before my 8 a.m. class, I'd pack. We had it timed perfectly. How many songs we could shake our bodies to in our tiny gray office, how many cups of snobby coffee, usually a pot, before I'd trudge through snow to teach. Early August, Ash and I packed a 17-foot U-Haul, filled the cab with a cat and a kitten who hated each other, along with my yappy Pomeranian and a litter box. We had never been west of Minnesota, she a native Minnesotan, me a transplant Michigander. We jammed to whatever radio station we could find, stopped only in North Dakota for a 4-hour nap, but otherwise completed the trip in 43 hours and 18 minutes to the border of Washington and Idaho. We crashed in my naked apartment on the brown carpet, little more than a light sheet upon us, and woke to texts we didn't know how to answer. A few from her boyfriend at the time, one from a pretty blonde-haired girl I'd saw on OkCupid. We ignored them, and like zombies, unloaded every piece of anything that belonged to us. Ash started writing poems like crazy, and I stopped, and that's the beginning. I began a PhD in English and rhetoric and composition at Washington State University, leaving the poetry me behind. I became immersed in a field I knew little about, knowing only that the highest I'd ever felt was in teaching composition, that I wanted that high every day for the rest of my life. I read articles that made me feel small, watched bodies freeze when I discussed my research interests, and drank a lot of whiskey in between. My thesis director had told me I should keep making poems the month before I made my decision to move to Washington, having the option to pursue a PhD in creative writing instead. And I shook my head at her. She said, "Well, in all my years, I know you're someone who's never going to stop writing." In hilly Pullman, Washington for 2 months, I was frustrated by the lie I felt my director had told me, and especially by what I couldn't stand to absorb. The man who didn't wave back on the bike path, broken beer bottles on the sidewalks, my winter jacket still hanging in the closet, no lake nearby, having to drive to a tiny patch of trees in the Palouse to hike to see any green at all. Ash, so busy in the world I left that we struggled to meet even to do work together every 3 weeks. My notepad stayed on the desk. I wasn't writing poems on the backs of receipts or into my palms anymore. I was actually paying attention in my pedagogy and rhetoric courses. My heart didn't leap into my sternum at anything or anyone. My MFA thesis had been focused on love between women. The poems were sexy, magical and real, raw and loud, dirty at times, mundane at others, and woven with care and rhythm. In both spoken word and for-the-page poems, I wanted to capture the kind of love in a woman making you an omelet. The moment you notice a new wrinkle beneath her eye, tracing a tattoo on the back of her thigh, how hands get memorized on trains in big cities or in cars watching freighters moan down rivers. But in Pullman, Washington, in this tiny town of the Palouse, no matter how many dates I went on with women, none of them made me want to write. I made dinner for one who couldn't eat more than 4 bites. She was sweet and talked with her hands and arms. Another made me eggs some mornings, usually overcooked, and played music I'd never heard before. Another, who canceled frequently, I'd asked out on a date after 2 shots of tequila, didn't know how to hold my hands back, and we talked less and less each week. Eventually, I hesitated to say what I wanted to say. I shut down. I stopped sharing old poems. I started road biking on the strange roads and couldn't understand why anyone would want to live in the yellow and brown hills that never seem to end. Most sunsets are pink here, and in the winter the light is gone by 4 p.m. It's taken me 5 months now to find a grocery store where I want to flirt with a cashier, a coffee shop where the chairs, even the walls, are worn, a route to my office where the trees bend the right way. Mostly, it's taken me a long time to get used to that yellow hue that takes the hills, the farms, from mid-morning to mid-afternoon. If I get up around 7:30 in the morning, clip the collar around T's neck, reheat yesterday's coffee in the microwave for 65 seconds, stick Stadium Way up the hill, turn around at the top just before the road bends. It's a filter you cannot get on Instagram. I wrote 3 30-page seminar papers, read more queer theory and composition studies than I can relate, walked my dog 4 times a day, started buying myself flowers at the Safeway grocery store each week, took baths, wore too much patchouli, drank more whiskey and Cabernet, and one night, before what I thought would be bowling and Jameson and a bad hangover in the morning, it happened. I wrote. The poem brand came on a warm Washington December afternoon, the kind where you just need a sweatshirt and warm socks while I was walking T up Stadium Way, the light dull and brown. I received a text relating my friend's grandmother and mother arguing about Christmas plans. I had just reached Harvey and Duncan with T and had paused to read her message. After squeezing my hands back into my mittens and shoving my iPhone back into my pocket, I looked up. When I saw the hills, gray beyond the city, sleeping muddy wheat fields, I knew my friend had given me a gift. Those hills, the same hills I couldn't let myself understand, made me question who I might make two women to be, where they might live, what they are upset about, and how they love. I have always believed that we argue because we love each other. And despite only having reached the merger of Stadium Way with Harvey and Duncan, 3 blocks away from my apartment, I started to walk back, started to consider, as Andrea Gibson wrote in her spoken word poem, I Do, how this kind of love has to be a verb. Familial love is so many verbs, so messy, so braided, and so ruthlessly necessary. I wanted to capture that. I wanted to write. Once home, I began to research everything to do with planting wheat, the same wheat, though the same friend argues, is something else that gets caught in my dog's fur in the summer. I learned combine and winter planting and stacking. I learned the hum and thrush of machinery. I learned every color of every month. I learned every hue of green, each flicker of yellow. I learned the dirt overturned, and I started to see a woman flicker underneath it all. She might have been Brand. She might have been me. She might have been someone I may never know. It happens is my point. It's true that it doesn't leave you. It's about waiting for the right spark, the right combination, the kick, the draw, the impulse to not leave for bowling on time and to write her all down. Again, I felt my heart in my sternum. I started tapping my feet on the brown carpet. My back was hunched over the paper. The wind whistled around my apartment, which grew darker and darker. After only 3 hours, Brand was drafted. I sent the sound file to Ash, 11 miles away in Moscow, Idaho, and her word for it in the morning was honest. In that moment, I knew my director had been right. It doesn't leave you. Sometimes you just have to wait. Sometimes you have to collect for a while. Starless nights over and over again, a mechanic telling you your Subaru will die in 2 months, your iPhone that won't light up, one girl's soft flannel shirts, another's copper eyes, her rough hands that won't hold yours back. What isn't said in what is said, what is said in what isn't. Ash is going to keep making poems each week. I'm going to keep figuring out how to fuse queer theory to composition studies. We're busy here. But I think what's important is to never stop dancing to what you want to dance to. Even if it means she's not going to dance back. Even if it means putting all the leftovers into Tupperware. Even if it means making your own eggs and reheating yesterday's coffee you couldn't finish. Walking your dog alone and her not wanting to hold your hands back on the off night she'll spend with you. Because when that happens enough, once you've danced hard and long, once you've got enough in your chest, you write yourself. You write her all down.